Time to check in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another Tacky Talk on a Tuesday, Tacky.
Hey, we're back to Tuesday Tackies for a little bit, and happy end of April.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Last day of April today. Wow, how did that happen?
I know you blink. It's a long month. Again, it had I think this was a how many Mondays this month? This was yeah, this is a 3-5 Monday month. And next month is going to be a 5 Friday month.
Yes, that's right. 31st is on a Friday this year for me. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very long month. Again, it's weird when you have the nature of Mondays and Fridays, and if they're very close to the beginning of a calendar day, it just seems like the month won't end.
It's
But
true.
it is a cloudy Tuesday, in case you're wondering. It's about 54 degrees ish at noonish, in case confirmation that we are actually live. As we put, I should just get the newspaper to put the lead. No, the ledger's not yellow yet. Get the globe in the morning and just. State,
The
yeah, like a here confirming identity.
data they can tell by our aging.
Well, one of us ages. I'm not going to say which one, but
Yes, that's right. I think I have an extra wrinkle right here.
last night, the thunderstorms last night, there was I was waking up to a loud boom, waited, and the next thing I heard, massive downpour, sound like an explosion in Quincy. So, it seems to be very isolated. I check with the staff. They live in different parts, and they didn't hear the same thunderous noise.
Yes, it was according to the forecasters, we're on a borderline of a warm and cold front, and the result is thunderstorms.
Yeah, it was loud. I was very surprised. I was woken up last night and I was like, what just happened? And it was one of those house shaking situations. I was surprised how loud it was. And then
Yeah.
when it started like downpouring, I'm like, oh, okay, that wasn't like an explosion somewhere because it was that loud.
Yeah, no transformers blew up. It's just thunder.
So, as you can tell, a little tired today.
Hey, speaking of electricity, I checked with the city about that question, with the municipal aggregation. Can you opt back in if you opt out? And the answer is yes, you can. However, be aware that it may be opting in at a different rate than first agreed to.
In other words, you don't get the municipal aggregated rate. You basically can go to Entergy as a private customer.
Yes. So you just
So
need to be
you,
aware of that.
in other words, you've been knocked out of the municipal aggregation rate, so you can't come back to the municipal aggregation rate.
Correct.
So I was right.
What? Who would ever guess you weren't right? Of course, we knew you were right, Jackie. Just wanted to confirm.
Once you're out, you can't get back into the municipal aggregation rate,
Yeah, you'll get in, but at a different rate.
which means private contract of energy.
Yeah. So just stay in if you want to stay in.
Agreed. And again, reminding folks, you have to May 15th to change the rate. You're stuck at standard rate at the moment, which is not the lowest rate. It is the mid-tier rate. If you want to get the lowest rate, you're going to have to call Entergy on the little whatever pamphlet, flyer, letter that you got from the city. You can use the website, or you can call a phone number. Phone number can be a little bit of a hassle, but I think in my mind, it's well worth the wait.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a few cents cheaper for the basic rate as opposed to the one that you get locked into.
Yeah, let me do some quick math here.
Okay.
If you save about 0.6 per kilowatt, let me get my calculator out, and you're a 500 kilowatt home.
Yep, that's typical usage. Yep.
Yeah. Let's see here. Save about $35 to maybe $45 a year.
Okay, well, it's not nothing.
Yeah, it's not nothing. That can be quite a bit. And of course, get variable. So if you're in the summertime here in August, you can jump up to perhaps between 6 and 1,000 kilowatt hours in the month of August. If it's hot and you're running your air conditioning, obviously our coldest month tends to be January, February, whether it be gas, heat pump, forced hot air, you're going to see a huge shock up in prices as well. Particularly you've got a heat pump situation, you're definitely going to be burning power like mad.
Right.
Particularly in the wintertime. So, that 0.006 cents could be 0.0 cents. Yeah, 0.06, 0.06 cents could be pretty substantial per kilowatt hour for individuals. So, yeah, I could say, depending on where you are, maybe an average of $35 to $45 ish, give or take.
It's a tank of gas or something, yeah.
Yeah, it could be, as if you're a heavy consumer, it could be a whole lot more than $35.
Right, exactly, yeah. So it's definitely worth it. So but you do have to take a little action to switch down to the basic rate.
Absolutely. So, definitely encourage again, definitely look at your memo. If you don't, I think it's a website, it's what, Quincy CEA?
That's right. Yep, dot com.
Yeah, so go to Quincy CEA to get details. I found that I didn't like the website that much in terms of applying by the website. That's why I called, but again, each to your own. It is not city run. I do understand some folks have been calling City Hall about this and so forth, but Entergy is not city run. It's a private energy company. So you have to work through Entergy to do so, and be sure to have your National Grid account number handy, because that's how they're going to identify you.
Right.
And you're going to read your live disclosures. So you have to be patient, because that those disclosures are very important to inform you of your legal rights. So again, a little bit of a hassle in terms of your time. I think it's well worth it. But again, I think people get like turned off by like disclosures, but disclosures are very important.
Yeah, it's, pay attention. They're there for a reason. They're to protect you.
Yeah, if you don't understand disclosure that's been read, definitely follow up and ask what the disclosure means. And customer service is generally, for the most part, very good about trying to ensure that you understand the disclosures. So,
Well, they're legally required, so they want to make sure you understand
yeah,
it.
what's going on? Yeah. So that way you're not like blindsided by this municipal aggregation.
Right.
So again, it's the 30th today on April. You have to May 15th.
What is going on Beacon Hill these days, Jackie?
Well, it's a quiet week, as we talked last week on Thursday. As I was being roll called the very end of our time together last week, which I'm not sure if you cut that or not. I didn't listen to the podcast last week.
I did. I cut out the part where you were running out of your office. Did
Oh, okay. So you guys are.
it?
I did make it. Those on audio did not hear the scramble. Those
No.
on video didn't see me just get up and leave.
No, but it was nice to virtually meet your staff, so that was good.
Yeah, you're welcome to talk to my staff anytime, Joe. They just don't want to be on air with you.
No, I'm sure they don't. I don't blame them.
As you can hear, there was a minor editing required on the last podcast because of the nature of the very end scramble of me running for it from my office. I'm in a basement office. 42 is a basement office. The chamber's on the third floor. We do vote in person, even though it's electronic voting by pushing a button. We do have to show up. So, a roll call opening periods generally is 5-ish minutes, sometimes three. Still, I am in the basement. I do run up the stairs because I have to, actually move my body sometimes. But
What, no
it's
elevators?
we do have elevators, but my rule is that I'll walk until my knees give out. And once my knees start to feel it, then I'll take the elevator.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's decades of granite and basic granite and marble floors have taken its toll on my knees in that building. It's just the nature of it. I mean, it's the nature of walking on that surface most of your adult life. So, that happens. But yeah, no, budget's done. Fairly quiet budget in terms of debate. Not a lot of controversy or people kicking over the sandbox, so to speak. And no, like raunchous debate. I think the membership's expectations has been tempered quite a bit. I know it was kind of a weird 3 years, but one of the things that did happen was increased wages resulted in increased income taxes. Big surprise. And you also had all this COVID money floating around that has to be used up by end of this calendar year. So everything's been allocated, just about all of it, not all of it, but just about all of it's been allocated out. So members were not looking to take more or try to get more than they can that's available. So we didn't add too much to the bottom line through the amendment process. And because of tampering expectations, I didn't hear of any real raunchous behavior from any of the reps about stomping their feet kind of scenario. People are very, very understanding this year. You'd be surprised when it's there actually is money to go around. People tend to be much more demanding.
I want a piece of it, right?
Yeah, and then on the flip side, when it's very, very bad, people go into desperation mode, try to save what they can.
Right.
So things aren't good, as I like to say, but the sky is hardly falling, hardly falling. We're far from that scenario. So, I think, leadership team, Chairways means Eric Markowitz and Speaker Mariano and the entire team did a good job on managing the membership. Remember, there's like 140 of us, well, 100, really 155 of us really got right down to running around trying to lobby the leadership team for whatever we're lobbying for. And very little public policy in the backside. So it's been very, very much a very narrow budget this year.
Yeah. Has the Senate introduced their version? Do you know?
They'll be doing it in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
It'll be a Wednesday in 2 weeks. They generally hold Memorial Day weekend against membership. So in their case, they'll start debate on Monday and try to get it done. Well, they sometimes start on Tuesday, depending on how things go. But they're trying to do it by Friday or Thursday before Memorial Day weekend.
Okay. So, and then conference committee after that.
Yeah. And the Senate will get better numbers. Obviously, it's April 30th. We do not receive April revenue numbers from Department of Revenue because April's not over. They should report something by midweek next week at the latest that new service will get from the Department of Revenue regarding the latest figures. So you're going to actually find out faster than I will because they actually tell news service before they tell us, which is kind of funny to where we live in. I mean, you remember the days of paper, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where I would actually be able to get those press releases in paper, well, similar time frame you would get, whether it be faxed over to you as opposed to being putting on a social media account or direct email or part of the listserv email system or being bought by State House News Service. I mean, the media information is very much changing. People kind of think I'm on the end, but because of how they move information today compared to what was 25 years ago. It isn't the same type of information gathering.
Right, no, it's all in real time, yeah.
Yeah, and we're not always part of the real-time loop.
Right, yep.
Because, like I said, when it was on paper, you could just run to the press office and everyone has to do the same thing, and you're getting yours as quickly as they can fax.
Yep, yeah, no, I understand. So maybe next week we should try and chat on Thursday, just so we have those numbers.
Yeah, let's see if we can schedule for Thursday next week. We should have those numbers available. And then we could have a chat about what I think where I think things may be going or not going. Tomorrow's Fed speak, Jay Powell's back out on the latest board meeting, and then Friday's unemployment numbers for April.
Right. Yeah.
So we get a better idea of the economy. GDP was a little peculiar on Friday. Which came in. It was a Thursday. Yeah, we talked about this already. About GDP was a little weird. And the PCE was in this terrible, it wasn't good, but it wasn't like horrific either. It was kind of like, the stuck at 2.7, 2.8.
Right.
Can't
Yeah.
move. So maybe you'll see what the Fed Reserve says on Wednesday about what they're thinking because we're in this sticky situation where we're trapped in this weird spot. But no recession. Or what I could refer to as conventional situation regarding people's spending habits.
Yeah, no, it's the concern that I've heard about now is this term called stagflation, where prices continue to rise, but nothing else does, including wages.
Nothing's moving quickly on CPI growth, even though it is significantly higher. So prices go up, but they go up slow, and wages don't go up really fast. Again, there's stagflation, there's inflation, there's disinflation, and there's deflation. Deflation is the most dangerous one.
Right.
It's a death spiral where you have prices go down, wages go down, people can't pay for stuff because wages are down, and then they have to lower prices again. And then you have massive layoffs because people can't buy stuff, and it's self-perpetuating horror
Yeah.
in deflation. And a country like Japan actually starved off deflation by creating stagflation instead. And they're actually hoping for inflation because they want economic growth. Inflation creates some growth. You don't need big inflation. You need like 2% below, and then you have growth. Stagflation puts you like into decimal points.
Right.
And there's, very little movement. And then deflation is what China's experiencing right now, where their consumer market can't, they can't get their people to spend money. And as a result, prices keep dropping and people still aren't spending enough money. And then the layoffs occur.
It's a domino effect. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, deflation is very dangerous. People think lower prices is good. Yes and no. I mean, you're gonna have things on sale, then permanent price reductions.
Yeah, because it just means everything else is sinking along with it. Yeah.
Correct. And layoffs follow very quickly during
Right.
inflation. And then the death spiral begins on the economy.
Right.
It's
So, yeah.
very, yeah. That requires a federal stimulus. Fed money has to go in, or government money's from somewhere, has to go into the system to try to bolster consumer spending. And then you have the Fed Reserve or central bank try to lower interest rates like insanely low to try to get people money out of the banks.
Yeah. It's, I almost wonder if the, the government response to the pandemic wasn't too much. I mean, it's injecting all of this money into the economy so quickly. I mean, yes, there was unemployment, but was it that high that they need to inject trillions of dollars?
Yeah, it was it was the Great Recession fear because unemployment had closed in, was closing in on 20% nationally. I mean, didn't get to the Great Depression levels, but it was close enough to freak everyone out. I mean, again, I mean, I hope to never see again 20,000 unemployment calls in 1 week
Right,
at
right.
my level of government, which you only had 50 employees taking intake because none of us could have ever anticipated 20,000 people making a call in 1 week's time. And blew out the entire internet system, like this blew the whole thing up. And of course, angry people called us during that first situation in COVID shutdown. And we were very understanding. I was very understanding. They were angry, but they, obviously they didn't understand there was 20,000 people calling at the same time that week as they were. So I
Right.
mean, we get it because we're in the same situation. But when people call us, they're not really worried about the 19,999 people that have been calling at the same time.
Really? Yeah, it's their situation, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of the nature of this job. I don't think people quite grasp is that, we're very understanding, but we're aware of the bigger problem, and there's nothing they can do about 50 people, 50 employees, 20,000 calls. But the person calling me could care less about the fact that one of 50 employees and there's another 19,999 people behind them. So, yeah, it's again, I get it. I get it. So, but I mean, I think the first stimulus was good, to bolster everything up. I think all the COVID money for businesses as best they could. They had to bail out the airlines because, again, airlines is a huge employer, same as car industry folks. I do think that the second stimulus probably was a little overdoing it. That was at the end of the 2020 election cycle. It was kind of a presidential, congressional, like, don't want to elect us kind of maneuver. Which then followed into the Biden administration, where then you have this ton of federal money coming on infrastructure and onshoring and all this other stuff, and of course defense spending is going to go up for obvious reasons, the news. So yeah, I think a second round was probably a little too much, particularly since they're going to inject out 10 years worth of capital improvement money into the country.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And nobody anticipated, Ukraine, nor the Middle East situation, nor the aggression of the Chinese military's posture with the neighboring countries. And the reality is, the U.S. defense industry is going to go, going to have to do a lot more than they've ever done, not just for us, but on a national level. And people don't realize that the European countries have a very minimalized defense industry. And people say that, well, it's a sign, of peace. It isn't. It's because they had the U.S. umbrella. They bought U.S.-made equipment. It wasn't like they weren't buying weapons, they just weren't buying local.
Right. Yep.
So the Europeans have now started ramping up the local defense industry again to a higher level, so they aren't codependent. they're not dependent on us for weapons. They want to be able to buy homegrown stuff in case, God forbid, the Russians decide to start moving to the West. They want to wait for, a fly in of U.S. equipment. They want to be able to, have stuff ready to go. So we're not returning to a military complex. We're not by any stretch. But, if COVID doesn't teach us anything, it's onshoring and some degree of self-sufficiency. Anything from medication to guns. I mean, everything is now becoming, we've got to have redundancies, particularly in first world countries that have good trading and defense pacts together.
Yeah, we saw that manifest itself when we had a shortage of simple things like face masks.
Yeah, and Tylenol and antibiotics and obviously ventilators and all kinds of other drugs and PEE, personal equipment, protection equipment, and then simple things like knobs on cars. That the car manufacturing will slow down because the inability to get parts out of Indonesia. So now I'm not saying globalization's coming to an end by any stretch. The US has been one of the biggest globalized countries since the day of sail, where we exported cotton and tobacco to the planet, as well as ship, fish, and corn, wheat. We exported a lot. So the US has been a crucial part of globalization from the days of sail. I do think that it's going to be a mixture of globalization and local industry development. It doesn't have to be in the United States, but all within the vicinity, Canada, Mexico, and similarly in the European Union. I mean, you're going to get the Germans, the French in particular, ramping up their defense industries. And that makes a lot of sense from their standpoint. And other countries which we discourage, like Japan, is not really allowed to build a defense industry. They're dependent on the U.S. umbrella because by constitution they can't leave the island and they can't have a standing army, have a quote-unquote defense force that's really more like very powerful National Guard with tanks. So I mean, the U.S. is going to have to really reconsider their Japan policy, which the Japanese are trying to reevaluate their own defense policy about whether they're going to ramp up a conventional military again if the US is going to allow it. I don't think people at home realize exactly how much influence we have on the Japanese restrictions on military development. But I
Yeah,
mean,
that's a result of World War II.
yeah, I mean, they're going to have to get, I won't say permission, but they're going to definitely have to consult with the US, which is why being part of a defense pact with the US is so important to them because they're prohibited and the US will prohibit them from leaving the island. They got belligerent North Korea and they got China encroachment. So I mean, we all know that Japanese is a major economic power and they could ramp up really fast if they needed to. They have the tech, they have the manufacturing capacity. So, but again, there's this U.S. component left over from World War II, which is still a standing policy regarding Japanese modernization. So, as much as people don't like the idea that the U.S. is kind of like the world global cop, so to speak, which is a term I find amusing but not true, but we also like to limit some countries from ability to defend themselves because we said so. So, and yeah. So I mean, the U.S. has some responsibility when you tell you that you can't do certain things.
Yeah, and it also goes to show how long things have been relatively stable in that part of the world until recently.
Yeah, the northeast section of Asia has been relatively stable after the Korean War, even though the Korean War is technically not over because we never signed a peace treaty. Southeast Asia, of course, in the second half of the 20th century into the 21st century is much more complex, particularly the Vietnam, Cambodia, Sri Lanka, Myanmar, all those areas. Even if foreign intervention left, China, Russia, US left the region, they still have their own different issues and instabilities. It's kind of complicated that whole southeastern region, including all the little islands. It's a longer conversation, a longer history, but the domestic issues regarding civil stability has always been complex. I'm not just talking about like bad government and corruption. talk about like native people's unrest and also like different security umbrellas because of nature to trade partners. It's very involved.
Want to talk about the college protests that are going on recently, Tacky?
Well, I mean, you have a First Amendment right to protest, but you also are on private property. So it is kind of a quirky thing because people think that university campuses are like being in like street corner. It's not. You're on this campus property, and the campus property controls what it, can and cannot do. There are, reasonableness use of their space. It's not like I can walk onto a college campus. I mean, it's called trespassing, right? If I go on there and cause anything, whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. Say trespassing and off I go. But I mean, there's some permissions allowed because of the fact you're a student and you pay money to go there, and but you still have to abide by the rules of the campus, and how they want to manage it. So I'm not getting into the messaging of that. This is not the first time we've seen this. Remember Occupy Wall Street?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, that was only a dozen years ago when a lot of these college kids were still in elementary school. We had Occupy Wall Street, which also created problems with college campuses. Not nearly as, rambunctious, I hear, depending what campus you're on, but this was a thing that was going on in certain schools too. Not every school, but certain places, was having a similar experience. And then, I'm too young for this, but you remember the Vietnam protests.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's I mean, the National Guard was called in. Kent State is the most famous one, resulting in the deaths of four students.
Yeah, Kent State's the one that I remember too, only because that's the one that's most cited in the history books.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there's got to be a level of reasonableness with this. And like I say, it's not new, folks. We've seen this before. It's just a different decade.
Right. Oh, anti-war protests on college campuses are not new for sure, no.
No, this happened in the Gulf War too, the first Gulf War. Those protests. Second one, not so much. Post 9/11, it was some, but very little. It was a different national security issue. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, to me, it's kind of the message of the day. And then there'll be a different opportunity for folks in a different generation to make their voice heard about something else. But, my opinion is that it is private property. They do pay to go there, but there are rules of conduct expected. And, it's up to the campuses to do enforcement of their students. And if it gets to it's like championship games, right? You've seen some college campuses just like destroy like a whole section of the campus. The local security on the campus needs help. We're actually very good in Massachusetts. Whenever like we win stuff, we don't destroy like a whole section of the campus in the championship game. We're actually Massachusetts is pretty tame. I mean, look at some of these other colleges. I mean, just ruin campuses. So, it's not. It's obviously doesn't rise to that level of raunchiness, but people should behave well, and I think people's tempers are very high. And it's a very touchy issue. And what was it? It wasn't that far from BLM either. I mean, George Floyd was a college campus thing as well.
Right.
Even though that campuses were kind of weirdly hybrid, it was a different type of protest movement. And there was protest movement too. And most of it was pretty civil, most of it. So
Have you
I
seen?
don't, it's not
Right.
new, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, right. Yeah. Have you seen anything at the State House with regards to that, Jackie?
No, it's been pretty quiet. I mean, a lot of what's going on in State House now is the return of advocacy groups. So, for example, we have Mass Nurse Association's going to do their healthcare nurse lobbying day. We have the Public Housing Tenants Association lobbying day coming up, I think next week. We have elementary school choirs coming in again.
Really?
Yeah, we do have elementary schools and high schools and college campuses come on to do singing performances in Great Hall. We do schedule that sort of stuff. A lot of the different recognitions and award ceremonies during the daytime of legislators are happening again. This week is actually fairly quiet because it's post-budget. But yeah, no, life is coming back. I'm getting more email notices about advocacy days at the State House. You can picture the broad range, for example, brain injury, AARP senior stuff, different unions, different business associations. They're all coming back. It's again, it's good to see. I like to see a building full of people, and an opportunity for advocates to come to our offices in person, to talk about what's important to them. It's much better to me than sitting on a Zoom call.
Oh yeah, there's no replacing an in-person meeting, that's for sure.
And at State House, I repeat again, I mean, State House, as you all know, is a very old historical building. It gives an opportunity for some advocates who never have visited State House before, perhaps to take an opportunity to take a tour on their own once they're done advocating, to enjoy the building as a visitor, to see the different historical components of the building. And now the State House is open, and obviously, certifications a week ago, but summertime's coming up quickly. No, again, I do encourage folks to come visit the State House and take advantage of a tour and appreciate a building that was first built in 1797. Actually completed in 1797. And the part I'm in, it was completed in 1897 and 1899, depending which tour guide you ask and what you want to make that foundation stone on Durant Street side. So
So you're in the
we still call that the new part of the building.
That's funny.
Still do. So yeah, I mean, they have to come visit, but it's been fairly civil in terms of protesters coming in. And again, broad range, anti-fossil fuels, ballot question initiative advocates. I mean, it's, but I mean, Massachusetts is pretty civil, but we're not like ripping down like paintings and crashing the gates. People are pretty good here. And we're an urban state house, meaning that there's no protection, there's no buffer between us and the building.
You're in the thick of it, right?
You visit other state houses, particularly newer ones, there's up to 2,000 foot buffer between you and the building.
Yeah, no, you're right in it. You're sitting on top of the common, basically.
Yeah, you can't, there's no way. I mean, there's no way that you can do anything. You're in the public nature by the building's nature, you're in the public. I mean, we have first floor windows facing street level with the sidewalk next to you. I mean, this is very unusual of state capitals.
Are you familiar with this raise the age bill, Tacky, that's being talked about right now? Raising the age of juvenile offenders to 21.
Yeah, this is not a new bill.
Oh, okay.
It's been floated around for quite some time about moving the age between 18 and 21. And why it's relevant is because juvenile records are sealed. And the argument is science. And it seems this is a very common argument now as we understand brain development better, then it influences how we perceive things. This is also an issue regarding substance use, right? Alcohol, marijuana and other types of substance use when you have a developing body, is different from how it impacts a fully developed adult. And brain development, some studies go as far as age 25 into reaching full development, which speaks a lot about us, Joe. But I don't know about you, but I mean, I wasn't abusing myself too poorly before 25. However, I never thought of myself as not an adult person. Until 25.
Yeah, no, I had made a lot of adult decisions by 25, that's for sure.
So, the argument is that, there's developmental, in terms of coming to full brain development and whether or not, that should be a consideration of moving the age limit using the science. I'll let you guys decide on your own what your thoughts on this. Criminal stuff is intent driven in this country. It is not strict standard, which is pretty much the entire planet. The strict standard, you violate the lines of the law, and there's no like wiggle room. Here is all intent driven, and as a result, brain development is something the science is looking at regarding intent. Does your brain have sufficient development to determine the intent? And
Right.
again, juvenile criminals are record sealed. So at a younger, a lot of stuff can happen, let's say on college campuses or your first job or, whatever life you're in, after the age of 17. Everyone's got a different story, as I like to say. And I'll let you guys think about it, on the podcast about what your thoughts are being and making decisions. Again, criminal intent in Massachusetts is the key word, is intent. But what were you thinking? What was involved? What were the circumstances, the totality of the situation of the crime? Not just the fact you violated the crime. This is unique, uniquely United States.
Interesting. So, yeah, as I understand it, it would not include murder or even some assault crimes as well.
Yeah, violent offenses.
Yes. Yep.
Felony violent offenses. And you've been around, I've been around long enough, and I'm sure many of listeners have been around long enough to discuss the concept of what is even a murder and other violent offenses of juveniles. And at what point did the juvenile actually understand the intent of the crime they're committing? I mean,
Yeah.
and sadly, you hear around the country about elementary and middle schoolers using firearms, shooting teachers and classmates. If you're a fourth grader who brought somehow got their hand on a firearm and brought into school and shoot your teacher, what's the intent component,
Right.
right? And this is a struggle for you're going to find there's going to be more of this struggle, particularly not in this country but around the country, as different states have different criminal laws. Are they going to start to try to address even lower age limits regarding violent offenses, which may be just a simple accident, but how do you determine whether or not a younger child has the ability to make a conscious decision to commit an act of violence?
Yeah, and that's not an easy issue by any means, for sure. Yeah.
No, and I don't think we should oversimplify it.
I agree. Yeah, it's much more to it than just saying yay or nay, yes, he or she did, yes, he or she didn't. Yeah.
Yeah, again, this is an intent-driven country. Every case is different. Every individual is different. And the approach of the prosecution and defense is individually based on the circumstances of the entirety provided. Again, this is more of someone actually does criminal law than me.
Right.
Not a criminal law attorney by any stretch, but this is basic law school stuff. Right? In my world, the only state that doesn't practice this is Louisiana.
Oh, is that right? Interesting. Okay.
French. The state courts use a French system.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the bar exam is also different because the French, Louisiana bar exam is very different from the other states because there is a state law component as part of the bar exam. Theirs is very different from even from a multi-state multiple choice component. It's just so very different. So
Interesting.
reevaluate how you approach the Louisiana bar.
Yeah. Okay.
You catch me as you can. There's a if you saw that movie, the was it Matt Damon in that film, and Tom Hanks. Yeah, it's about fraud in the 70s and how you commit identity theft. I think it's Matt Damon. I'm trying to remember who was the
Yeah.
no, Leonardo DiCaprio. The Caprio. Leonardo
Oh,
DiCaprio
okay.
was the Caprio was the protagonist in that, or the antagonist, depending how it is, because the hero is really Tom Hanks is the hero chasing him. But no, he passed the Louisiana bar exam by just memorizing, because he was gifted with incredible memory, just
Wow.
memorizing the law books and was actually able to pass the bar exam.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I am no good at movies. My terrible at movies. I don't know anything about them. So.
It was like a scam involving, I'm trying to remember the whole scene involving like a daughter of like district attorney or something. It was like a whole thing.
Interesting.
It's been a very long time. I think I was in law school when I watched that film.
Okay, catch me if you can. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, the real life person actually works for the federal government.
Ah, okay.
After he completed his prison time, he actually became a contract for the feds regarding a cybercrime, identity theft, and similar type of crimes as a consultant, because I think he's a consultant because it takes a crook to catch a crook, so to speak.
Yeah.
even though technology's changed, you know, this dude's mind is just so nimble and brilliant that regardless, even though the text change regarding the fact that you just don't change a couple of checks and you know before we had water seals on everything
Right.
or embossing stuff with different types of security things on legal documents, you know, he can still think of ways of getting around even modern technology.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it gives you a leg up, actually, if you know how a criminal is going to think, right?
That's correct. So I'm sure somebody out there that's listening knows what I'm talking about and can actually name all the details. As you can tell, my brain is a little foggy even remembering chapters in it. But that was a long time ago.
I read this week that the governor's thinking of using the closed Chelsea Soldiers Home for some of the migrants that are coming into the state. Do you think that's a good idea, Jackie?
No, are you kidding? I swear to God, I mean, their ability to run the press room is getting very troublesome. Between Tibbetts, Ebbets, whatever, the secretary, making up stuff about taxes that are not happening because there is literally nothing filed about this in conversation with us and in border tolls that we talked about last time. I mean, the administration's complete inability to actually formulate a plan on how to address this migrant issue is astonishing, troublesome. And they're just, it's literally like you just throw anything on a wall here as opposed to looking something more comprehensive, given the fact you know the fire hoses are turning off. So you better have a plan of, you know, how to move the water. And they can't get their head around this. They really just cannot. And the legislature is extremely frustrated on two levels. On the first level, of course, is our impact on our individual districts. The second issue is we want greater accountability in the spending because they're just running around, just dropping money. And we're like, what are you all doing with said money? And we recognize the money isn't just for the shelter component. There's a whole human service need component associated with it. And you know, we did account in this year's Chapter 74 almost regarding minimum student. We also provided some monies to cities and towns regarding the impact on schools of influx of students. And we also, you know, required more money for English second language classes. Quincy has minimal impact because, you know, our migrant center is just, you know, come in, get processed and go out. So we don't have as much impact as some other communities. But my colleagues, you know, in the house, you know, are just absolutely fed up with fact that, you know, those two little things. We need to know what your plan is, and we want accountability. And we passed, you know, more than one time now, supplemental budgets that uses what's left of ARPA money to try to get through this. And, you know, we put in all kinds of guardrails and accountabilities to report back to basically House Senate Clerk, which basically reports back to, you know, us, you know, to tell us what's going on. And you know, way how is this money being used? So as you can tell, for me, I mean, my frustration level is equally as high, even though I represent a district that is not as greatly impacted as some of my colleagues. So I mean, they're just whipping anything out there now and wait for public like backlash. And even some stuff that's temporary, like in Southie, I mean, the private building contract is really short term. I mean, it's just by to the summertime. And then, you know, the lease is up as they're just using it as another waypoint from point A to point B. And think about it from these poor families. I mean, they're just being shuffled around the state. So you got these, you know, pregnant women, you know, family of young kids. You know, many of them escaped, as you may keep up with the Haiti news in particular. I mean, there's just absolute horror of that island. And then, you know, they're getting shuffled here, shuffled there, and they're not being told there's a plan.
It's almost like it needs to be a separate authority to oversee this.
Yeah, they can't do it. They just can't figure it out. I mean, you think they have a room, you know, with a PowerPoint for these migrants to tell them what the plan is? They do not have a clue. And trust me, my colleagues have been dealing with these different migrant groups around the state. They've actually spent time with them more so because they're more embedded in the community issues. The migrants have no idea. You know, much less we do. And as you can tell by my voice, if you're listening via podcast, you know, that I'm as equally frustrated and I'm just like, come on, people. I mean, you gotta have, yeah, got to be able to figure this out. I mean, you got enough bodies working on this, and the fire hose ain't turning off. So you got to have a plan for where this water is going to go. And the governor had a chance to try to propose this in her budget, on some of this stuff, and they didn't. And they just, our colleagues, my colleagues are tired of the fact that, they're not getting, any kind of solid responses. As you can tell, I've been talking to my colleagues and I share their frustration on this. So,
Do they have thoughts? They have ideas that they'd like to see implemented?
well, they want to see what the plan is. They want to see, how this movement's going to go. They want to get these folks into the workforce. We all know the housing crisis is a universal crisis. It's not like strictly, a limited group. But there's real serious concerns about the fact that how do you get these folks up on their feet and where, put them into the societal workforce, right? That's a big thing that we want to know. And the other one is, human services. I mean, a lot of us, like us in Quincy, is part of a large human service network. How come these folks aren't actually plugged into it as well as they probably should be? And how come we're not getting resources to the human service networks that can get these folks, moved up? And then we have English classes problems. They need English classes. How do we do adult English classes better? Again, the existing human service network has English classes as part of it. Some of you listening probably have used it. Mostly, I'm going to gamble, have it. But I mean, English class is a big thing in Quincy that, I've been working on pretty much my adult life. One of the things that's a bedrock of employment is English.
It's one of the first things that Quincy Asian Resources it gets people involved in right away.
Absolutely. And they do a lot of workforce development, right? There's an example of an organization that, can help on workforce transition.
Yes, right next door here at the library, they have English second language classes. They've been going on for years.
Absolutely, because of the nature of how the city's developed, right? The migration of folks, people in here. So, we understand the work papers is a problem. The feds have been really terrible and slow in getting these folks' work papers, which we want to continue to push and accelerate. But I mean, this is a real question for our federal delegation here. As I like to repeat over and over again, see, as the towns can complain to us about lack of resources, but we got nowhere to complain when we have a problem. And this is the one area that we've and complain about to the feds because it's something that really isn't our creation. And COVID aside, that was kind of a special circumstance. But historically speaking, the federal government does not support states in terms of these type of things. A lot of federal programs is trying to incentivize states to follow federal guidelines. Some of it is just directed unfunded mandates from the federal government. I mean, people think cities and towns are the only ones that have unfunded mandates. Well, we do too. It's, a fight between us and the feds, but we have the state has no complaint up saying that, well, give us local aid. It doesn't work that way. It never has because the state feds don't do that. Like we provide local aid to cities and towns. Ours is really just, all tied to various strings on the federal level. This migrant issue is really driving us bonkers because of the fact that, the administration has no clear, like, what are you doing? And we want to know what you're doing. We want to know how much it's costing taxpayers. At the same time, though, our federal delegation, has been not exactly forthcoming about how they're going to try to address this. And this is a national problem. This is not unique to Massachusetts. And apparently, all of Congress can't figure it out. They'd rather use it as a political wedge for campaign donations, particularly in some of the more conservative states, because that's where this sells best, beat up migrants politically. Then Democrats would beat up on those folks beating up on migrants to raise money. I mean, this has got to stop. I mean, negative campaign collection is a horrible, horrible way of raising money.
It's literally on people's backs.
Well, I mean, it's on people, other people that you victimize or glorifies to make donations off of. And, I get more than my share of emails from national candidates, not just local, like other candidates nationally and other organizations nationally tied to political groups. And it's, I do like flip through it really quickly. It's amazing this negative I call them negative fundraising. They just speak ill of other folks or put fear into your heart and then try to get you to give them money. It's absolutely horrific. But it's very national approach. And I'm sure some state government legislatures approach it the same way because they probably use the same consultants.
Right.
Obviously, those who know me do not do the fear tactic donations. I mean, if I don't do that. That's uncalled for. I'm not going to victimize or glorify somebody because I want to get campaign money out of people. That's not happening.
Hey, let's end with two happy things here in the district, Jackie. Cleaner, Greener Quincy is coming up, and then the Senior Olympics.
Yeah, Clean and Green, it's this Saturday, the 4th, I believe. If I remember correctly, they do have a barbecue at Pageant Field. Senior Olympics is always great. They put me to shame.
I wouldn't mess with those Olympians, no way.
Yep, the broad range of physical abilities of senior citizens. And, like my mom, who would not participate in Olympics, but I do encourage her to exercise as much as possible. And I think that's a lesson for all of us, not just, our parents and grandparents. All of us really should increase our movement. It makes a good mental health. It's good physical health. And, it helps forestall potential issues down the road as we all do age. So, I wish everyone have a great time on Cleaner Greener but also, best wishes to everyone participating in the Senior Olympics and, I'll have some good sport and good fun.
Yeah, it's 35th Cleaner Greener and 40th Senior Olympics.
Is it 40 years?
Yes, 40 years.
Wow.
I know.
Didn't realize it was going on that long.
Yeah, started very small and has since grown to a big an almost 2 week event.
Well, I mean, I've done a couple of these. I think I got invited to do a volleyball thing. I don't know how to be terrible. They're like, you got to lose to the seniors. I'm like, I'm not pretending. I'm just bad. There is no
Oh,
pretending.
and they're really good.
Yeah, they're really good, and I'm really bad. So, I mean, I remember it was like, yeah, you can't win. I'm like, can't win. I don't even know what I'm doing out here. How did I get talked into this? They like kicked
Best
me.
to cheer from the sidelines.
Oh, yeah, I got kicked hard. I mean, they just beat me up badly. This was when I was like 10 years younger, and I was like, I'm losing badly because I'm not good at this. So, no, I'm not participating in Senior Olympics again. I'm telling you. I mean, don't mind being embarrassed, and people know I enjoy good fun at my expense. I don't mind that, but just that and just wow, bad, just not being good at something.
It's good to know your strengths and weaknesses for sure.
Again, I don't mind being, a little good fun at my expense is perfectly fine, but this is straight up embarrassment at one point.
It's that happy time again where we'll tell folks how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. Please reach out. With questions or concerns, definitely give us a call. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tackey.chan@mahouse.gov. Please feel free to send an email. We do log your emails. We do prioritize based on what the email says and concerns, but being known that I do see them, including all the ones that come in and form email by bulk from various advocacy groups. We got State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. My staff runs that. Hopefully they put some good pictures of me up there. Tackychan.org is our reference page. I actually do get people use that email to reach out to me too. They do have a contact block. And then we also have malegislature.gov. You do not have to call me about a bill. You can go to malegislature.gov and look it up yourself, and you can create your own login. There's all kinds of like features for folks to do their own research without me. And then we do have at Tacky Chan. Keep forgetting about at Tacky Chan now because you can't call it Twitter anymore. And obviously, here I am with Joe, and seems like a Tuesday or a Thursday. Seems like, we're keeping with the T's. And check with Joe first thing in the morning on the AM as well. So, plenty of ways to find about stuff and plenty of ways to try to reach out. But again, I always encourage phone and emails to two parties. Please do not social media me. It's hard enough trying to keep up with the white convention, considered the most conventional ways to get a hold of me.
Excellent. Next time we talk, it'll be May, Techie.
May Day's coming up, huh? May 1st.
Yes, we can go dance around the Maypole up at Marymount.
Yep, May Day's coming up. Yeah, you have to tell the Marymount story. I'm trying to remember up to my head, and I cannot. Next time we can talk about that. You may remember the story better than I will. I have bits and pieces, but I know that I can't remember the whole story off the top of my head. There's a story with that.
There is a story, and I think it involves some rowdiness. Let's put it that
Yeah,
way.
let's save that for the next conversation.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thanks a lot, Techie.
All right, take care, Joe.